Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for joining us again for another webinar. We're really excited to get your thoughts on today's topic of developing a framework for a common healthcare policy to benefit our society and all Americans. So we're going to jump right in. Today's presenter is Thomas Campanella, who is a healthcare executive in residence at Baldwin-Wallace University. So I'm going to jump right in with our first question, Tom. With the transition to a new administration in Washington, D.C., there's a lot of open questions that are directly and indirectly related to health policy. There's also a lot of concern that our leaders will continue their war on words with very little positive results. Instead of traveling down separate roads, can our leaders come together and go down the same road when it comes to health policy?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of hope involved with this. But I also think, Kristen, that there is definitely a reality that can indeed occur. I think one of the challenges that we've been having, especially over the last, well, really the last 8, 10 years, is the issue that from an ideology or political perspective standpoint, everybody seems to be sort of housed in two different camps when it comes down to healthcare. And there seems to be a sense that when you're talking about healthcare, that if you want to have affordable healthcare, you have to limit access to care from one perspective of individuals. And then you have another set of individuals that are saying that, well, the only way you're going to be able to increase access to care is by increasing the deficits at both the federal and state level, which is also, there's some obviously negative realities there. So it comes down to you have both of the groups in effect different camps, and they've been sort of stuck in those camps. And where I'm coming from is we really need to address the real elephant in the room, and that is our costly healthcare system, which is really not value-based. And when you think about the cost of waste in the US, it ranges anywhere from $760 to $935 billion, about 25% of the total healthcare spend in the United States. And this information comes from multiple sources. And I think, you know, for people in the industry, they recognize that indeed it's out there. And when you think about those types of dollars and waste, you could do a lot with it, including obviously addressing a lot of the access to care issues. So what I'm suggesting is we sort of need to redirect that discussion.
That certainly is a huge elephant. The amount of waste is really astonishing. So Tom, can you provide a framework that would potentially facilitate a collaborative approach to addressing our challenging healthcare policy issues?
Well, and one of the reasons why I'm looking at a framework. What I like about that word, and you know, my background, as you know, Kristen, is in health economics too, is to really try to, in effect, depersonalize the issue. And what I mean by that too, as it relates to, again, embedded ideologies on both the left and the right and that, and really focus on where there's opportunities to collaborate in agreement. And when you think about relationships, I don't care if it's business or personal, when you're really trying to sort of find a way to sort of work together, you start off with finding not where we're different, but where we could potentially have sort of a common agenda, if you want to use that term. And I think when you think about it and what really needs to be done in healthcare, there's opportunities as it relates to that and the common agenda by saying we need to, one, focus on a societal and political debate around the compatible goal of, one, a value-based healthcare system. I mean, again, this is like mom and apple pie. I don't care what political perspective you have, the idea of recognizing the need to have a value-based health system, I think is should be number one on the list for no matter where you're at. And then the other part of it is obviously to transition to a true health system for all. And I'm going to emphasize the all part of it all, so that it's not just for the haves, but for the haves and the have-nots. So it's really that dual goal is where we should be focusing on and focusing our discussions. And I think that with that will come that, I think that depersonalizing aspect of ideology, and at least start with those discussions. And what you're really doing here is then identifying sort of endpoint where you want to get to. We want to get to that value base. We want a health system that is a true health system, not a sick care system for all. And once you have that identified, you're laying the foundation for collaboration and discussion. And so with that shared destination, you're basically in a position where you have a true health system with, you know, that will ultimately impact, because they're sort of embedded in each other. Because if you have a value-based system and you're addressing everything, you know, from an access standpoint, you're addressing both the access to care as well as quality, as well as the cost side of the equation, which really, when you think about the individuals, the ideology issues on both left and right, they're all basically saying that's what we really want to get to. So where I'm coming from here is basically being in a position that if we've identified that endpoint, then we need to say, and again, I want the viewers and the listeners of this to sort of relate this to their own lives to make sure that it really is sort of a common sense, practical approach. It's not an academic approach to collaboration. And if you've identified sort of like the end area or the end destination of where you want to get to, then like anything else, there are steps to get you to that point. And where I'm now going is when you think about this and some of these items that are on this PowerPoint, is that you're basically saying the combination of these points here really will get you to both a value-based system, but also a health system for all, and a real health system, not a sick care system. And again, as you go through these, what I call pit stops on the way to that ultimate end, I think you should have common agreement on both the left and the right and the middle in regards to these issues. One is increased transparency of costs so consumers are better purchasers. There's an increased engagement of the consumers in their own health. I think everybody recognizes that the consumer, the individual, the patient needs to be actively involved in their own health, or really you're not going to get to the point of optimal health for that individual, especially when you're talking about things like chronic diseases. You want to be able to have choice. And I think everybody understands choice can be very, very positive. And, you know, from that standpoint, but obviously it's tied to the transparency part, both from a cost and quality standpoint. You need to expedite, and again, I think there's common ground for this, expedite to transition from fee-for-service to a risk value-based system that basically rewards providers for maintaining healthy patients. Again, has been a history of collaboration with Democrats and Republicans recognizing that that's a direction that we need to go to. Another area that we've been talking about for years, and actually Kristen is a pet peeve of mine, is the interoperability of electronic medical records. That needs to be done. And I think everybody recognizes that we need to find a way to be able to holistically bring together on an individual basis that, you know, sort of all the, both the clinical visits and health related issues, no matter which physician or system you go to, but also hopefully adding to that social determinants of health indicators if we can get through some of the privacy issues. Again, I think all parties would agree on both the left and the right and middle about the value of primary care. And I think if you're really getting into and you're trying to address the cost side of the equation, but you're also trying to address the issue of providing better overall care to the masses in a sort of a holistic way, primary care is right in the middle of all of that. And what we're already seeing, and again, we're seeing it integrated into Medicare Advantage plans and Medicaid and others, is a recognition from all parties that that we need to indeed address social determinants of health. And then, you know, obviously we need to find ways to increase access to care. Now, obviously, and I'll get into that in a minute, there is some debate as to how you get to that point. But again, I don't see anybody saying we're, you know, against access to care. Recognition, I think we, again, and it's there's no argument here, a recognition of the increasing financial challenges facing Medicare. We know Medicare, you know, as it relates to the aging baby boomers, extension of life, all of those challenges that they've been facing is, you know, a major challenge. We know that. And I think all parties recognize that we need to be able to address that. How we get there is obviously subject to debate. And Medicaid, you know, at the state level, most states require a balanced budget. And right now, over the last like 5 years, 6 years, Medicaid on average has gone from 20% of state budgets to 30% of state budgets. So part of the challenge there is we need to have more a vibrant Medicaid programs in all the states, but we also need to recognize the cost side of the equation. So, you know, the effectiveness standpoint. And then ultimately, too, I think there needs to be, and there is, a recognition that by addressing costs, you will again increase access to healthcare services. Now, again, at the same time, you need to be able to recognize some of the barriers there. But those pit stops, I think, are really critical. And there's a lot of common agreement that really sets the foundation for collaboration to get to some ultimate solutions and get to that ultimate end of a value-based system that also addresses population for all.
All right, so tell me what you think about the Affordable Care Act. Will the debate continue?
This is part of the challenge that we're having, Kristen, and this ties into where I was coming from before. It's really easy to identify what we don't agree with or to sort of do sound bites where you have maybe one group of individuals saying the Affordable Care Act is the best thing that has ever happened. You can't touch it. And any threat to it is, you know, a challenge to healthcare and access to the individuals. At the same time, there's also on the other end of the equation, discussion related to the Affordable Care Act that everything about it is wrong and we should abolish it and we should throw it out. And so the bottom line is there's this big heated debate on both sides, and the end result is you get stagnation and you really have two separate camps that really can't find a way to collaborate. So what I'm suggesting, and again, I want the viewers to look at this as it relates to even any business related or personal issues they would have when they're trying to get through some tough challenges, is maybe sometimes it's best to leave the rhetoric off the table and again, depersonalize it, or in this case, remove the ACA issue for or against, and really focus on what we're trying to get to, which is a value-based system and healthcare population and a health system for all. And in the process, we also need to recognize that there's a scarcity of resources available. And I think, again, everybody needs to recognize, and I think they do, is that while healthcare is critical, and we recognize that, but the economy, issues related to jobs, our educational systems, all those areas where infrastructure, national defense, where both the federal and the state government gets involved in, well, you know, those are key priorities too. So we got to ensure that what we are doing in the healthcare realm is not negatively impacting our ability to be able to address those other societal priorities at both the state and federal level. And so bottom line, any initiatives you come to with has to be, and the focus needs to be, making sure that it's cost effective. And I don't really see, if you do that and you focus on that, I think there's less sort of disagreement.
All right, so what about the ideological debates that, you know, focus on a government-run system versus a market-based system? Is that another additional barrier?
Well, actually it is. And I want to first start off with, as it relates to the in effect, the government-run system, or even things like Medicare for All. And I've also have done a blog on this, and I'm not going to deep dive on this in this webinar. But basically, I just, in reference to that, Medicare historically has been the biggest payer in healthcare. And as the biggest payer, as you would expect, is the biggest influencer. And historically, again, it's been controlled by, you know, Congress and basically administrations. And the bottom line in this is, as you would expect, is that as you try to really address and transition Medicare and the way they do things to being value-based, it is impacts the a lot of stakeholders. So consequently, that is the reason why, and I've discussed this in previous webinars, why Washington or state capitals, as it relates to Medicaid, are always the biggie in regards to lobbying on, with each sort of stakeholder looking at their slice of the pie. The bottom line is, you know, we really haven't been able to, because of all this push and pull, stakeholders and people not really able to make tough decisions, the Medicare hasn't really been as effective as it could be in sort of shaping our healthcare system to be more value-based. So what I'm just saying is, for the people that are talking about government-run programs, that the only way it's going to work, and Senator Tom Daschle years ago in his book even stated this, is that you really would need to set up a Federal Reserve for healthcare, just like a Federal Reserve Bank, with healthcare experts addressing all those tough issues. I don't think we're there yet as a nation, so I'm not going to be focusing on that right now, but I will talk about that later. But I will say, on the other side of the equation, for those that believe that the market system hasn't worked in the US, is that really, as I noted in the PowerPoint, we really don't have a market-based system in healthcare. We have some significant barriers for a lot of reasons have been out there forever, basically, that are preventing it. And one, we have lots of regulations that prevent and don't allow that maybe not, and I'm not saying regulations for regulation's sake, but don't allow organizations to really be able to compete effectively. And, you know, and as part of that too, is you want to be able to be in a position where you have, you know, antitrust enforcement and the ability to be able to not have dominant players control the market or buy the market. And, you know, and we don't necessarily have that. So we don't necessarily have it in a competitive way. And then over and above that, we sort of have systems in the way we pay things and the disparity that actually, and I'll get into that in a bit, which actually encourages even more in some cases consolidation. Over and above that, as I mentioned about asymmetric information, that's a health economics term I use, and you know, is out there, and that is really information imbalance, and this really ties to the transparency part of it all. So like any market system, you buying a computer or a cell phone or that, if you don't know the price and value differences between the different players, you really don't have a market system that really would drive better value and costs. And the moral hazard part of it all, as relates to health economic term, is really the consumer has to be able to have a stake into that decisions, you know, from a financial standpoint to one to a certain point. And we don't really have that. And so the bottom line, as a result of that, you know, we don't really have sort of prudent purchasers of healthcare services out there. So we really need to find ways to maybe make the market system work and allow competition to work as intended. And bottom line, what's great about a true market system, and we see this in so many different areas outside of healthcare, it will incent increased innovation, and it will positively impact costs and quality. How many times have you heard, you know, how come in other sectors through competition or through other areas, as over a period of time, prices actually go down and value goes up, but in healthcare, costs seem to always go up, up, and up. And a lot of that obviously is due to the whole arena of competition that really incents value-based competition from that standpoint. And the bottom line too, this will all, when you put it all together, will not only impact costs and quality, but by doing that, will impact access to care for most Americans.
So the advantages to a market-based system are pretty obvious, and you explain them very well, but is there not a downside to a market-based health system?
Yes, there is. And there needs to be a recognition. And a lot of people look at the market-based system as a silver bullet. Well, it's a silver bullet that has a lot of tarnishes to it. And that's where there's a role for government. That's where there's a societal role. And we need to be able to do it because we need to be able to achieve that other focus, which is our goal that we're our endpoint that we've talked about, and that is sort of transitioning to a health system for all. And when you think about market base, is that if it was a pure market base, there would be less financial incentives to address health needs of the poor. Because the bottom line, the poor, you know, if your organizations or whatever, they are not in a position to be able to provide enough return on investment for stakeholders that are out there. So from a market-based standpoint, they're really, you know, that's a major issue. And then as it relates to providers, they would focus on value-based care in a competitive environment to increase their profits. And so the focus would be their particular organization, and there would be less focus on the overall health of the population, or in cases of hospitals, less focus on sort of care or population health outside the walls of the hospital. So the bottom line is, while the market-based system is critical, and we don't want, and it allows for a much more innovative and cost-effective and efficient healthcare system, there is a role for government and other stakeholders to address the population health. So you really do need both.
That makes a lot of sense. So what key legislative or programmatic initiatives need to be implemented or maintained to address the needed transition to a value-based healthcare system and population health for all?
Well, you see a big laundry list here, and obviously this is the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot, but I wanted to identify some key legislative issues or initiatives that affects both, you know, the transition to a true value-based system, but also addresses the issue of going from sick to a real health system, and also addresses the issue of overall population health for all Americans. There needs to be, you know, as we look at it, legislation in different forms that facilitate increased competition, value, and innovation. And again, as I mentioned before, this was an area where I think there was a lot of common agreement. And in fact, even though it didn't get that much publicity, the Health and Human Services back in December of 2018 did an extensive report in regards to choice and competition. And they came up with a number of different legislative as well as administrative recommendations to allow us to become more of a value-based system. I definitely think, rather than putting that in a scrap heap, that the new administration needs to look at those. I think some of the recommendations are indeed very viable. And I also think some of the recommendations, as we've already talked about, there would be common agreement no matter what your political perspective or ideology is. So I think you already have a little bit of a roadmap there. I also think, and we've also talked about it, is that health savings account and health reimbursements accounts have worked. Like anything else, there's some blemishes that need to be addressed, and there's also ways to make it more effective. So there needs to be an objective look. And the key is at those particular areas, because it does bring in the consumer and puts them in a position to being more of a active purchaser of healthcare services that really lays the groundwork for value-based competition, which allows really the market system to work. Medicare Advantage plans have been shown to be very, very effective. And right now we're up to, I think, right around 40% of seniors are in Medicare Advantage plans, and most baby boomers, a good percentage of them, about 80%, are going in that direction. And so the Medicare Advantage plans have the ability to be able to really foster a lot of competitive environment that would also encourage and incent a much more value-based system. And at the same time, they provide choice. And at the same time, they're embedded in that, and we need to do more of it. They're addressing issues like social determinants of health. We talked before about price transparency. Anything related to that, we need to be able to address it. There's been some legislation already on it. There needs to be continued focus on both that and obviously the quality end of the equation. Value-based benefit designs, I think, definitely need to be looked at as it relates to Medicare Advantage, instead of basically, and allow them to be able to include that in there. Because when you're thinking about that, you're in a position where you're basically providing sort of incentives for individuals to pick more value-based providers or services. And that should be an option and a choice, and it definitely would drive towards and incent more of a and encourage more of a value-based system. Enforcing of the Cures Law. This ties into what we were talking about before with the interoperability of electronic medical records. We have been talking about it. We have laws on the books, but it hasn't been enforced, and there needs to be aggressive enforcement for us to really address both the cost side of healthcare and the value base, as well as the whole issue of social determinants and population health. We definitely need to have a seamless interoperability of electronic medical records. We do need to expand Medicaid for all, and I recognize there's cost issues, debates, and we need to address that. But we also need to recognize that Medicaid, and what I'm not Medicaid for all, but in all states, because really there's a gap there, and there needs to be a recognition. Now, at the same time, we got to ensure that as we're doing this, we're making sure that we're doing it in a cost-effective way. And that is, in many ways, establishing risk and value-based relationships with providers and almost requiring that to ensure that Medicaid is operating in an efficient manner so we don't have financial challenges at the state level. We need to look at the individual market plans, you know, as it relates to the different shopping that we're able to do in healthcare as relates to the uninsured that are not covered by Medicaid, we need to be able to expand that marketplace approach and maybe add subsidies in certain cases. But what we don't want to do is just subsidize high healthcare costs. So this is another example where, yes, we may need to do some subsidies to allow it to be more affordable, different plans for individuals that have less income. But at the same time, if we're not able to address the cost side of the equation, all we're doing is subsidizing high healthcare costs. So we really need to have both of those in a very interactive way. We need to, you know, even though I mentioned about the Affordable Care Act, that basically we don't want to get bogged down in the debate in it. What we do need, though, is we have enough, I think, history with it to really bring in clinical and actuarial experts and objective experts that are not with hidden agendas on either side to be able to evaluate the various stipulations and provisions of the ACA to ensure that it's is doing the job that it needs to do. And that specifically relates to both making sure that it's addressing population health, but we also need to, as we do that analysis, make sure there's a cost benefit as it relates to healthcare costs and premiums as relates to it. And does there needs to be a tweaking or a different focus or whatever? But that should be done by the experts, not the politicians. We need to, as we talked about before, embrace payment methodologies that reward providers for keeping people healthy. An example of that would obviously be capitation. And the incentive there, instead of the more we do, the more we will make in a fee for service, would be the way we make money from a provider standpoint is to keep somebody healthy. Who's going to argue with that? And that's something that we, you know, and obviously maybe some providers have provided, give some resistance to it. But this is something politically where I think the parties can come together. We need to, you know, nonprofit organizations, 501c3 organizations like hospitals have a community benefit requirement. And I think we need to relook at the criteria related to it, because as tied to that is tax exemption. And as relates to that tax exemption, we need to be in a position where there needs to be a recognition that hospitals, for an example, need to focus most of their efforts to justify community benefit outside the walls of the hospital, not inside. Instead of focusing on areas like looking at, Medicaid and reduced reimbursement of Medicaid and justifying community benefit as the difference between that and what their charges are, or even with medical education, the focus needs to be outside related to population health initiatives, collaborations, both with other providers, including hospitals. And, you know, that should be the focus, because think about it, community benefit means community, and that's where they need to go to. And then finally, there needs to be a recognition of personal accountability in different ways in legislation. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're penalizing people. A lot of that's going to be incentives related to educating, but we need to get the individual involved in their own health.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Tom. So we are coming up on our time here. So do you have any closing comments that you'd want to leave us with?
Well, guess what I do, and as you'd expect that. And bottom line, I'm saying issues surrounding healthcare are too important to not seriously evaluate all potential solution or ideas that could benefit our society. I've used the term in blogs and webinars before about benevolent confrontation, and that is confrontation for the right reasons to make things better. So we do need to be able to get people into the room. We do need to be able to, you know, sort of look beyond and walk into other people's shoes and really look at the end result that we're trying to go, or in this case, the analogy that we've been using is that end destination. And what that will do is open up and set the foundation for open and honest discourse on opposing perspectives and sort of depersonalize it. Our political leaders, even having different ideological perspectives, must recognize that by coming together on a long-term sustainable solution to build a health system that delivers value-based care as well as a healthy population, you're not only going to benefit all Americans, but you're also going to benefit and allow us to have a stronger society as well as economy. And it will create jobs in the private sector in that, because that will ultimately make and allow the burden of healthcare benefits, for an example, and premiums be less and be more effective and allow employers to compete, allow us to better compete on the international side too. So the end result in all this, there is opportunities and a foundation for communication. We just need to sort of go beyond the ideologies and recognize that we need to really focus on that end result. And here's my own little paid political announcement. Baldwin Wallace University, where I'm a healthcare executive in residence, we're in a position where we try to help organizations in different ways, you know, with our experts, our faculty, and everyone else. And as you see here, these are some of the things that we do, both on an organization or employer level, as well as for both for-profits and nonprofits, as well as what we can do and work with on an individual basis as relates to educational needs.
And now it's my turn. Quadix provides end-to-end revenue cycle management solutions for your healthiest bottom line. And I'm going to leave it at that since we're coming up on time. And if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to Thomas directly. And make sure to follow him on LinkedIn for his amazing insight, as always. Lots of content on his page. And then if you have any questions for Quadix, you can email me directly. And we appreciate you taking time out to listen to our webinar today.
And Kristen, I want to thank you and Quadix for the opportunity to be able to collaborate with you on this, I think, very important subject. Thank you, and I wish everyone well, and please keep safe.
Thank you very much.